We're back for another edition of the Big Red Louie podcast. I am your host, Jacob Lane, joined tonight by my co-host, Presley Meyer. It's been a long time since we've been together, my friend. I believe since Chris Mack was on the show. That was the last time we were joined virtually on this podcast. How are you, buddy?
Dude, I'm doing incredible. You know, you can't ask for much more on these great 95-degree days with no sports. Reds are back, though. Reds are back. Only two games below 500, so far, so good. So you really can't complain.
Yeah, and golf has been on for like 5 weeks, and nobody's cared.
Sir,
we're also joined by Alex Stengel, our producer. Alex, how's it going, man?
You're just throwing punches right out of the gate, Jacob. That was like,
look, man, he's not been here for a couple of weeks.
The best part about that is you guys didn't even bat an eye when I said the Reds are two games below 500. They've only played four games. All right.
So I'm aware because I watched that terrible loss the other night.
Yeah, Reds Twitter is worse than Louisville Twitter. I'm going to tell you that now because it's like game one, the Reds always win. I feel like the Reds always win their season opener. And then game two, it's like, all right, here we go. We're going to go undefeated. We're going to make the playoffs. And then like halfway through that game, they're like, all right, Reds suck. The season's over. What are we doing? This reliever has thrown, has given up seven runs. We're terrible. We're not winning anything. And then shortly thereafter, the season collapses. It's like a ritual every single season. And it goes the exact same way.
Every stupid loss is going to be amplified by 100 because there's only 60 games versus 162. So literally every game counts the same as like three games in a normal season. So every
I kind of like that, though. They actually care now. Like, it just seems like there's more on the line per game. I don't mean to get into things right out of the
No, game, you're exactly right. But we're gonna go into all of the leagues coming back and starting up as one here because it's been almost 3 weeks since we've had a live podcast. And there's actually been some sports happening. The NBA, MLB are back. The college football is really close to a decision, or at least the conferences are, on what things are going to look like over the next couple of weeks and when the season gets started. And there's a couple of different options on the table that I think are worth discussing. But I want to start tonight with something that I don't think I'd ever thought we would talk about on the show. And that is Jack Harlow, Louisville's beloved rapper who is continuing to just blow up day by day, getting an NBA player in trouble because he just so happened to be at a place that he shouldn't have been, snapped a photo that he shouldn't have snapped. And it cost somebody a longer quarantine in the NBA bubble. I know you guys have seen this, but please give me your thoughts on Jack Harlow snitching on Lou Williams of the Clippers.
I mean, how long did it last on social media? Because somebody was like, oh, did you guys see Jack Harlow's Instagram? And I was like, no. And literally by the time I went to look, it was already gone.
So, it couldn't have been on Instagram for longer than maybe 15, 20 minutes. There's too many smart people out there that follow, you know, hip-hop artists and then also follow basketball pretty closely.
The main takeaway for me from this is that I need to go to a strip club. I've never been to a strip club before. I don't know if we just could come out and say they're at a strip club, maybe a family podcast, but I need to go there because apparently the food at Atlanta strip clubs is amazing. So I'm not sure if the Godfather or Trixie's or any of these other places that I've driven by but never been to, in case my wife's listening, I need to go in there and check out their wings, apparently, and whatever else they have on the menu. Can you imagine just sitting at a strip club and eating wings and just, like, watching naked women just, like,
Let's get the facts straight, right? So Lou Williams claims that he was there to pick up carry out. I know that he left the bubble due to an emergency family situation, and I believe I saw on Instagram that maybe somebody in his family passed away. And I get it. Look, you're leaving the bubble. You need to get food, right? He probably doesn't have food wherever he was staying. But the strip club, that's a new one in terms of I got to go get dinner. And he defended himself. He said I've seen people say that it's, you know, in Atlanta, that's common for people to go to strip clubs to get carry out for dinner. But I'm like, man, the awareness of an NBA player in that bubble to do that.
I also just want to make it known, we have there's almost but a guarantee that Jacob is going to cut that segment just for our future sake, for jokes as well. Cause that was probably one of the best monologues I think you've ever done. on here. So I just want to make note of that. So
who, me or Presley?
I'm talking Presley.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
That was amazing. I think that was incredible.
I think I'm going to have to text your wife after the show and let her know to listen to the 7 minute mark of the intro so she can be in for a little treat.
I think that she would be totally down to try some strip club links. I'm going to go on the record and say that Taylor would 100% be on board with trying Trixie's wings.
But all right, here's what we're going to do. And when the pandemic is over and life goes back to normal, Presley, you're going to take Taylor, your wife, into a strip club here in Louisville, and you're going to get wings, and we're going to do it live. We're gonna ask you how it's going. We're going to listen to you eat. We're going to just get the whole situation
I will just straight Lou Williams it, okay? Because I'm sure that Jack Harlow was just there for the wings. So what will happen is I'll just call into the show. We'll order carry out from this destination, and then we'll just go in and get it. And just see what happens. I want to know I want to know the full experience. Like, is who is serving me this food? Like, am I supposed to tip an unusual amount of money? Like, I don't know where just for full sake of clarity here. I legitimately have never been inside of a strip club.
Honestly, that I don't even make sports anymore at this point. I've, like, the storylines are even better.
I've never been inside of a strip club, so I think.
All right, so.
I'm assuming that they're like what Barney Stinson's experience is like, is what I'm assuming. Does anybody know who Barney Stinson?
I do. Yes, I'm very familiar with that show, and I would say you're probably not far off there. Here's the thing I want to talk about. So the bubble now has had two mishaps, right, with players leaving the bubble and doing things that they aren't supposed to. The first one, which I still think is so funny, is the delivery driver going to the wrong place, and Rashawn Holmes of the Kings just crossing over like this equator that exists around the campus that, like, barely over it, getting his food and coming back and finding out he has to quarantine for 10 days. And then you have Lou Williams, who goes to a strip club to get his wings while he's back home for a family event and put on for everyone to see on social media by a rapper, which, first of all, Jack, if you're listening, man, look, I know everyone's got their own belief on, you know, what's going on, whether you need to wear a mask, what you need to do. But, like, I don't think anybody needs to be going to a strip club in Atlanta after they've been traveling. No matter, like, right now, that's probably not a good idea. And, by the way, did you guys see that there is going to be in Houston, James Harden, if you're listening, I think you'll enjoy this, a drive-by strip club?
I have seen this, and I was wondering, like, what is the protocol, right? Since we're just going into all these strip club details and I have no idea what strip clubs entail, what is the protocol for a drive-by strip club, right? Like, is it like a courtesy to get your car clean beforehand?
I envision it being like the underground lights, the cavern during the winter.
Yes, that's what I'm picturing. Like, this is like the very overpriced underground lights at the Mega Cavern.
There was some like article on USA Today or some online, like, quick, and it had like two of the saddest photos I've ever seen when it came to that story. So you guys aren't far off, especially with Jacob's interpretation. But no,
you've been to a drive-by strip club. Let's just ask that question first before we move on.
No.
No, okay. All right. I thought the way you were talking about that you had, and the way you're like, yeah, you know.
I read a quick article online about one, which basically makes me an expert.
But. And then, like, how are people going to judge you based on, like I drive a 2011 Accord, so, like, should I not take that because then I'm not going to get a better service? Like, I don't.
I think in 2020, it really doesn't matter at this point, Presley, for being honest.
You're getting way too in depth about strip clubs, but I'm saying just in general. I'm sorry. Ooh. Sorry to group you in there.
I got defensive there. Me? I would never go or talk about strip clubs more than I should.
We'll let you ramble on this topic.
We can come back to this. I know we have a lot to get to, but I did just text Taylor and tell her that I was going to pick up dinner from the strip club. So I just want to see how this goes.
All right, you got to break into whenever you get a response from that. And I want to set the scene for our listeners who are who have been listening. You probably know by now, if you've been listening to our show, that I have a daughter. Presley's got a couple of dogs that typically bark during the middle of the podcast. Alex has got a very large dog who typically can be heard breathing in the background, and a cat who will kind of play around on his keyboard. But right now I am playing defense at home with my daughter here. So we transitioned from a crib to a more what we like to call big girl bed for her. And the first couple of nights have been a big transition for her now that she has freedom to get out of bed in the middle of the night whenever she wants. There's no longer four walls around her sleeping situation. She can come and go as she pleases. And she's been taking advantage of that quite a bit the last two nights. And so I've told you guys before we came on, and obviously we're not going to probably be sharing the video of this podcast, but as you guys can see, I am playing defense by the monitor and just waiting for her to get up to come to the door so that I can meet her there and make her go back to sleep. So if you're listening, that's a little sneak behind the curtains of what's going on here. And if I have to get up and run in the middle of the show without explanation, you know why that's happened. So it's with that being said,
there could be worse entertainment.
There could. She has been kind of like in a sport of my own. Like it's the game of Ruby where you just have to constantly kind of chase her around all day. It's a game that she thinks is really fun. I find it very tiring. But let's move on into college football because that is the big ticket item right now. Obviously, I know the NBA is getting ready to get back underway on Thursday night, so just in a few nights. But college football, they're the next kind of linchpin here to make a decision on a season. And we are almost a month away from what the regular season would have kicked off September 2nd or 3rd for Louisville. And there is still no understanding of what a season is going to look like, if there even is going to be one. And that is all happening while there is a surge nationwide in COVID cases. So we are kind of right back into square one. However, there's leagues that are playing in college football. We've talked about it plenty of times on the show, and you've probably read about it by now, but college football programs and programs across the country, they need the money bad because of losing spring sports. And so there's going to be, I would imagine, some form of season here. But the ACC, they're supposed to be meeting on Wednesday, which I guess is that today. I don't even know what day of the week it is. Tuesday today, Wednesday today. They're supposed to be meeting this week to make a decision, and there's a couple of options on the table. And I don't know if you guys have read into this or if you really kind of know where they're trending here. But obviously, at this point, conference games only is what it seems like. But for schools like Louisville or, you know, some of the other schools who have big rivalries in non-conference or in opposing conferences, there's a push for maybe a game or two outside of the conference. But there's so much happening right now that is unknown with the pandemic and how things are going to go. What are your guys' thoughts on what that's going to look like? Is there a preference of what the season looks like? How many games, when they start it? Like, what do you guys think?
Well, first off, today is Tuesday because tomorrow is Wednesday, my birthday. And that is the only reason I know tomorrow's Wednesday. So, shout out to myself. I will be 29 on the 29th. And I did not know this, but Jacob said apparently this is my golden year.
It is your golden birthday.
What a year to waste.
Golden
it, right?
Grams. What's your golden ticket idea?
My golden ticket idea?
Great. No. Keep going. Just keep going. You didn't get the reference. I did. It's not. Okay. There will be some people who will and some people who won't. I thought that was great. Keep it moving.
I'm Willy Wonka.
I'm assuming it's something from The Office.
You're correct.
Okay.
You're correct.
It's a safe bet with you guys. So, not in a bad way. I didn't mean that. I didn't want that to sound like a slight.
Well, happy early birthday to you. But what are the thoughts on what a college football season look like? Which we have a poll up on our Twitter at the Big Red Louie. You should be following us if you're not already. But which option do you believe the ACC goes with for the 2020 season? Alex, I'm going to lay this out here for you. But 10 games plus one, 8 games plus one. Both of those would kind of fall in somewhere in the fall. Or do they hold off until the spring? Or do we cancel or have another solution under our fingers here that we're not sure about?
Yeah, so I think they're definitely going with the 10 plus 1 as like their main full steam ahead option until I think they're going to be forced to pivot. Conference games, like here's the thing. I mean, if you just reduce the season by 3 games or 4 games or whatever that looks like, I mean, safety-wise, does it really make a difference? You know, because every game is a risk when you think about it, because you're bringing two teams together in two totally different geographic areas, even though they're going to be a little closer to each other. I like the idea of the 10 plus one. Obviously, one would probably be the UK game, I would assume, because it's still regional for the most part. But yeah, I think they're going to play. I mean, there's just so many indicators that I've already read about that they're really trying to push, even if there's no fans, right? I think that's the big contingency right now, is not the games, but the fan aspect as well. So I can see them pushing the season back a little bit. I know they talked about not pushing it back too far because they're running the risk of backing up into training and in preparation for the season after that. So there is it's crazy the amount of things you have to think about on any of these decisions for the most part.
Yep. So we haven't had a chance to really sit down and talk about the implications of all of this, but I put my thoughts out there on the website when some of these rumors started coming out. I believe it was the Big Ten who kind of hopped on this conference only train first. And although other schools have been pretty adamant about the fact that, or other conferences have been adamant about the fact that it's not a guarantee that any of this stuff happens. It seems like the writing is on the wall that if one of the Power Five conferences moves to only play conference games or maybe have conference games plus one, it seems like every other conference will probably hop on board. The NCAA, like usual, is being absolutely completely weak-minded about all of this. So, of course, they would do the weakest thing possible and say absolutely nothing and put it on the conferences.
Right. And that's the best part, right? I mean, essentially that's the huge theme, is like in crunch time, where has the leadership been? And everybody's been calling for it. Even, you know, pro athletes have spoken out about it. The fact that whenever we truly need, you know, some ideas, some leadership, some, all right, here's a plan that we're putting in place. Here's what we're trying to do. You get none of that. It's we're gonna watch these guys over here, see what they're doing, see what works, see what might not work, and then probably reconvene in a couple weeks, and then, you know, do it all over again until eventually, yeah, you're either gonna have to cancel or, you know, just start the season. So I think the lack of leadership is just another compounding thing that the NCAA needs, like a whole regime change from the part.
The next take on this, since the NCAA has basically put the onus on the conferences, right? The conferences are going to do the next best thing and try to do whatever's going to make them the most money. It makes – the only reason that this makes sense is because of money, right? So in Louisville's case, for instance, they're not going to have to pay Western Kentucky and Murray State this year, in a year where every school is going to be hemorrhaging money. So they're going to do what's best for them. The Power Five teams are going to do what's best for them. It's not going to cost them any money. They're not going to have to pay out of pocket money to have teams come in and play them, right? So that's a big deal. To me, what makes the most sense financially is to completely restructure the schedule, bump it back to the 8+1 structure, which is what has been thrown out there quite a bit, either 10+1 or 8+1. But I think it makes the most sense for the ACC to break the schedules up into regions and then go and do home and home schedules with the region. So a perfect example of how this could work, for instance, you could have a region with Miami, Florida State, Georgia Tech, and Clemson. That's a perfect region. So all those teams play each other home and home. Even better, you could have North Carolina, North Carolina State, Wake Forest, and who else am I missing? Duke. So North Carolina, North Carolina State, Wake Forest, and Duke are all within an hour drive of each other. That's a perfect scenario for them. They all play home and homes with each other. Doesn't matter if there's fans in the stands, any of that stuff. They can take – it's just a short bus trip. It's like the equivalent of UofL playing UK every single game. That makes the most sense for them to do. Now, where it gets sketchy is when you have, for instance, a scenario where it's going to be Louisville, Pittsburgh, Syracuse, and Boston College. Those colleges could not be any more spread out, right? But if you went 4-4-4, it makes the most sense to do the regions that basically that I've given. Then you have Virginia Tech as an outlier. So you could perhaps have something like Miami, Florida State, Georgia Tech, Clemson, in North Carolina, and then have like Virginia Tech, Wake Forest, Duke, and NC State. I'm not sure exactly how they would orchestrate it, but from all accounts, from all reports, especially from Kirk Herbstreit, it sounds like that is probably the direction that the conferences are going to try to go. For Louisville's sake, I'm hoping that Notre Dame is clustered in there. If Notre Dame's just going to come in and royally screw everybody, Louisville better get to play a home-and-home with them this year. I wouldn't be mad about that, but I would be mad about having to play Boston College and Syracuse twice. But in my opinion, I think that that's what's going to happen. I think they're going to do an 8+1 or attempt some sort of an 8+1 with the fallback option of having to push the season back to the spring. So those are the two best options, in my opinion. What do you think, Jacob?
Yeah, I think that's a great idea, and I love the idea of kind of regionalizing. And Alex and I talked about this a couple weeks ago on the podcast. What does that impact have moving forward? Or could we possibly move into some kind of massive realignment should the power conferences break away, where maybe you kind of regionalize things again and make traveling easy for the next couple of seasons so that programs can kind of build their revenue base back up and keep expenses low? And actually, I just saw this on Twitter that the ACC Board of Governors and the presidents were expected to meet tomorrow and make a decision on scheduling and what the season would look like. They've now bought themselves a little bit of time, pushed that decision back. They'll be meeting to discuss, but no decision is expected. So what I think they're doing is they're trying to buy time here. They know they have that September 11, 18th range is kind of their kickoff. They could start there. But I think what's going to end up happening is, because you have to take into account what is happening with the Miami Marlins, which we're going to talk about here in a few seconds, but travel is the one thing with sports the last few months I've always said is going to be an issue. How do you travel state to state and put a big football team? We're talking about 85 players plus maybe another 25 walk-ons, 50 coaches. How do you travel like that to cities and not worry about having to go through airports and do things that expose you to more outside interaction with people and potentially be exposed to the virus? And so travel is something that they can't – I don't think they're going to be able to travel. And Presley, so that's where I think that your idea comes in of a regionalization. And I think that you could do that with Louisville, with Notre Dame, and the other schools. It would be tricky. But I don't think that's what the ACC wants to do. I really don't. I think what the ACC wants to do is they want to try to find themselves a couple more weeks, go to an 8+1 model where they put 2 weeks in between every game, where teams are able to go back and quarantine. Because if you're traveling here, you're going to have to incorporate some kind of quarantine. You're going to have to avoid risk and avoid cases coming higher and higher. No travel is going to be able to be done without that. So if you have an 8-week season that can push into late into the winter, maybe even into January, February, late in the winter, I think you can do it, and you can play games and you can allow for more leeway with buys in between. And yeah, it wouldn't look like a normal college football season, but we have to come to an understanding here that no season is going to look normal. I understand the talk about fans, because I think you can do it. I think you can bring fans in and social distance, just like Louisville City has done. But Presley, to your thing, I think that you just can't travel, no matter where it is going to be difficult unless you can incorporate a quarantine period. So that's why I think the 8 games, regionalization kind of working hand in hand, and then you can maybe get off a football season safely.
Also, shout out to Louisville City for finally winning their first game in their new Woo-hoo. Stadium. Because people were getting a little worried that they went 0-2 with the new digs. So that's good news. They only went 1-0. It was pretty close. But, they're 1-2. Either way, I do agree with what you're saying in regards to the quarantine process. And I think that's the one thing that no one really knows what that still looks like, right? Because that's going to determine the length of the season as well. Because if there's an effective way to do it, then they're going to be gung-ho and want to play more games. But if there's still, not a clear-cut process that other teams and other leagues and people can follow, it's going to be a little more chaotic. Because you're seeing, like you just mentioned, you're seeing the success of the NBA right now and how controlled they're handling things. And then you're also seeing the chaos of the MLB, to where, a team tests positive they played, a game, 2 days prior. So there's a lot looser things, and so there's just no continuity, I guess, between the leagues and the way things are done at the moment. And I think that's really concerning.
Yeah, the only other scenario that I can think of, and honestly, I just thought of this, and I can't believe I haven't heard it thrown out yet. If every school in the ACC goes to socially distanced school, online learning, right? So that's 14 teams. It seems like we're heading in that direction. To me, that's what it feels like. It just doesn't logistically make sense to have college classes with 500 kids on campus. It doesn't make sense to have fraternity houses and big parties. Like those are going to be just cesspools of coronavirus. Like it doesn't make sense to have college right now, right?
Right. So, and the thing is, Presley, is in the same hand, like 18 to 22 year olds should not be forced to be put, I shouldn't say forced, but to put them in a situation like that and expect them to act as if they're adult and wear masks and not do those things right. It's ridiculous. And so you're right. You cannot bring students back on campus, which there's going to be a huge group of people who come to you with this question and they say, well, how do you keep college football and college athletes on campus then? They're students, aren't they? To that, what do you say?
Right. So here's my proposal. If we're all going to be socially distanced, which it seems like that's going to be the case, right? It's almost a better scenario to not have the rest of the students on campus, because then those are the only people that you're coming in contact with. So why not take it a step further? If we're playing in these pods and say it's, you know, Louisville, Pittsburgh, Syracuse, and Boston College, why not take it a step further and say, okay, Pittsburgh is the safest city right now. You know, I know they were thinking about moving the Blue Jays down to Pittsburgh, right? So just as an example, Louisville, Syracuse, and Boston College all do online remote learning in Pittsburgh. So they remain in that city for the entire year. They get their education there. They practice there. They play there. Why would that not be some sort of reasonable option? Like if you have Clemson, Georgia Tech, Florida State, and Miami, it seems like there's a bubble working well in Orlando right now. Why not?
There it is, folks. The magic word of the night, bubble, was waiting
bubble!
For
bubble.
Gotta have a bubble.
Gotta have a bubble. So
look, so, you're right. You got to have a bubble.
So that to me, that's the only way this happened, right? And I think that's kind of the direction we were trying to go next is there a season in any league without a bubble? We're seeing already in Major League Baseball just how quickly stuff can break out. Now, granted, it was in Miami, which is one of the – it was coming from Miami, right, which is one of the worst cities. I think they were in Philadelphia. Is that right? But regardless, it's not going to make sense for Major League Baseball to keep – to continue playing this season with players being able to just freely go about and live their lives. And I know that doesn't seem fair or right, but you could have players opt in or opt out. You know, we're already seeing guys in the NBA and NFL that are choosing to sit out the season. We saw Asia Durr, former Louisville player, is choosing to sit out the season. So there are a number of different options for teams, but I don't think that you can exercise those options without everybody being in the same area. It's the only reasonable way to do that.
Right, exactly. And I think that the argument to people is fair if they say something along the lines of, you know, why would the college students who are athletes be allowed to stay and those who aren't allowed to stay, especially when you have a lot of colleges that have international students. Like, you're really kind of going against the NCAA's model of student athlete and that they're student first. But I don't think that you are at the same time. Like, let's be realistic here. They need college football. Universities cannot exist outside of Ivy League schools and the D2 and D3 schools who don't, you know, bring money in from sports. But those big universities are all existing because of money that is coming in and awareness. And, you know, it's bigger than just money. It's marketing and building awareness of your brand outside of your own state and region. And the fact of, you know, trying to think that I completely lost my train of thought here. But my point being here is that There has to be a bubble. There has to be a bubble. And I think that Stuart Mandel was the writer from The Athletic who wrote about the SEC bubble in Atlanta and how that exists. And my point was, let me get back to my point, was that they are student athletes, but they make money for the university. And I think that there is a little bit of treatment that you could, you know, you can get them in a bubble and you can, you know, they can opt out. Get, like Scott Satterfield said, if they want to leave, you can leave. Like, if you're not safe with this, but we think that you're safer here. But if they can create a bubble, take their student athletes to Atlanta, take them to Indianapolis, take them to, you know, some place in a regionalized place where they can stay, continue to do their schoolwork, have access to tutors, be around their coaching staff, and you play a, you know, a 6-week season, maybe you shorten it to that much so you can play and you go from there.
Yeah. Or you could even break it up and do, say this is getting super complicated now, but they could travel to a city and play 4 games in a cluster and then take 4 weeks off. You know, they could take the weeks off from Thanksgiving to Christmas, you know, Thanksgiving to New Year's, and then come back and go elsewhere, get tested, redo the whole process, and then play 4 or 5 weeks on again. So I think that there's options out there. It's just going to be how creative our coaching staffs and athletic departments and, you know, people within a conference, how creative are they willing to get for the sake of making their university money. And nowhere is that more important than Louisville. I know, you know, my wife gives me a bunch of grief about, you know, every time she's been to the Thornton's Academic Center where she's seen, you know, something else on Floyd Street getting built or seeing additions on campus that only have to do with athletes. And I'm always, you know, pretty quick to remind her, well, I mean, you wouldn't have this nice, newly renovated school university if you didn't have athletics. Well, you know, that's why you can boast about how good your education is, because athletics are what has carried schools like Louisville for so long.
Yeah, and I think that there's other ways that you could get you know, kind of unique things to happen with the schedule. You know, whether it's if you do have to bubble or you do have to quarantine for extended periods of time, maybe you play the same opponent twice on you know, your home field and then on their home field in a course of 2 weeks. Maybe you do travel to regional sites every 4 weeks and you play, you know, 3 games over the course of, you know, 15, 16 days. I don't know how you would do the scheduling thing, but there's some unique things that you can do. But I think that all the while, you have to have a bubble. You have to create a bubble. And I think it was Dr. Fauci who said it's going to be really hard for the NFL, really hard for the MLB to go about having full seasons without creating a bubble. And you see with what happened with the basketball tournament, you know, you have a case inside of a bubble. They remove the player, remove the team. Nothing. There's no issues there. The NBA now has gotten it to where there are no positive cases within the bubble. And players who leave and have to come back, they have to sit out, you know, for 10 days. Lou Williams is going to miss 2 games in the seeding pod of games because of exiting the bubble and going to get wings at a strip club. Like, I can't make this up. Like, this is what happened. And because of it, now the Clippers, who are just a few games behind the Lakers in an attempt to get a 1 seed, could be, you know, put in a really bad spot because Lou Williams decided he wanted to get wings. So
the best part about that entire situation too, before we just drop this forever, is the fact that the Clippers have only played, I think it was like 6 games this year with every starter healthy. So like they probably have the second best chance to win the whole thing. And finally, when they get everybody healthy and they have a chance to really try to compete for that 1 seed, one of their better guys off the bench, back-to-back 6th man of the year, perhaps 3 years in a row, 6th man of the year, gets basically suspended for 2 games.
The things we're going to get to tell our grandkids about that happened in the NBA during the bubble season, like, because I think we're just kind of hitting the beginning of the iceberg here, because not only has Stephen A. Smith talked about this, Colin Cowherd talked about this today, players want sex. They want the sex. And you got 22, 23-year-old, like, single men in a bubble that want the sex. And so they're going to try to sneak out of the bubble to get the sex. And that's going to cause issues. And because, like, I wonder how many players honestly would leave the bubble if they knew that they wouldn't get caught and then try to come back. And that's where I think the NBA could run into issues. Lou Williams is a completely different situation outside of the bubble. When you have guys who go over the barrier to get picked up and then brought back to the bubble, it gets a little bit more challenging to keep the bubble clean. But speaking of the NBA, I want to talk about one more thing before we wrap up the show here. Presley, you and I have been talking about this the last couple of days. If we've been kind of working on an article about Jay Scrubb and Jordan Wara, the NBA Combine, and everything that's kind of going into the NBA draft process right now for the former Cards who've got a shot to play in the NBA. And I thought it was interesting that the NBA was sending out Combine invites without even knowing if there was going to be a Combine. Because if for those that don't know or don't follow the NBA draft, the NBA draft was expected to be a month ago, almost like I think it was a month yesterday. And so that's been pushed back to October now with a season extended. And so the NBA draft process is still really unknown. What's it going to look like? But the NBA Combine invites go out. They send them to the top 60 players, more of a way for these players to make a decision of where they stand with teams. We wrote about who does it matter more for, Jordan Wara, Jay Scrubb. They both are kind of in similar spots in draft range, but for completely different reasons. And would they even get one? And sure enough, almost 48 hours later, we now know that Jordan Wara and Jay Scrubb were invited to the Combine that we don't know whether or not will happen. So I ask you this, with that being the case, you now know that they're both invited. One, it's a two-part question. One, who do you think, if there is a combine, who do you think has the better showing? And two, who do you believe gets drafted first, Jordan Wara or Jay Scrubb?
I think that Jordan Wara will have the better combine. I think that Jay Scrubb gets drafted higher. How about that?
Interesting. That's an interesting combo, because I would go opposite of that. I would say that I think that Jordan's going to have the better – well, I shouldn't say – I think that Jay's going to have the better combine, and I think that Jay's going to get drafted higher than Jordan Wara. I think his ceiling is one of the highest out of every player in this draft right now, and such a weird, bad draft. So for people who are like you, Presley, and don't follow the NBA draft really that closely, this is considered to be one of the worst draft classes in years.
Yeah, it's historically weak. You know, we talk about the historically weak bubble, you know, the historically weak draft. I mean, look, I think it's all about fit, right? And I mean, somebody could look at Jay Scrubb, and I know how scouts are all about drafting off of potential, and there isn't anybody with a higher upside, like you said, than Scrubb. And that's the reason why I think that Scrubb will get chosen first, is because there's more for him to prove than with Wara, right? With Wara, you saw him play, you saw him start in 60 plus games in his career. You saw the full spectrum of what he has to offer. He played against Kentucky 3 times. He played against North Carolina 5 times, played against Duke 5 times, played against Virginia 6 times. Like there is so much more tape on him and so many more things for scouts to analyze. With Jay Scrubb, you don't really have that. You don't have – I mean, I'm sure scouts are able to get their hands on a full game tape, but even if they do have that, it's not going to be what it is, you know, watching Jordan Wara play on national TV every game. It's not going to be the same watching him play JUCO, guys. It's just not. Like, when you watch his highlights, it's just unfair how much bigger, stronger, more athletic, and just overall better of a player he is than 98% of guys out there. So for me, that's why I think it's nothing against Wara. I just think that Wara he's shown where his ceiling is. And unfortunately for him, organizations would rather take a risk and draft on potential, than go with, you know, kind of what they already know. And I think Wara projects more as a role player, whereas Scrubb could actually find his way into sort of a starting spot on a mid-level team.
Yeah, but with Scrubb, it's going to be a slow burn. Like, it's going to take a couple of years because, like you said, the JUCO level, I heard Luke Hancock talking about it on the radio this week. How do you, as an NBA talent evaluator and scout, how do you even judge that talent? Like, how good is he really playing against a bunch of dudes from, you know, some college in Iowa? Like, how do we really know if he's, you know, good enough to compete in the NBA? I think that the physical intangibles about him are going to be what scouts are like drooling over by the time the combine's over, because he's 6'6", 220 pounds, and his ceiling is incredibly high because of his athleticism and ability to score. And I think that translates well for him. But I think that, you know, at an event like the combine, I think scouts are going to want to see him against other people. Can he play against some of these guys from college basketball? And you should be able to know pretty quickly from there whether or not he's going to get drafted based off that. I tend to think that he's a guy that's got, you know, the a really high ceiling and can be a lot better if he gets a couple of years to play, maybe in the G League and, you know, time to really learn the game. I wonder who would give him that and who's interested enough. Is it a young team? Is it an older team? But I think that he's going to have a really good combine. I think we're going to get to see a player that, you know, we're going to be like, damn, man, that would have been so good to have at Louisville. I think that the intrigue is going to be enough by draft time to where he is going to be a guy you're hearing at the top of the second round, and maybe teams want to try to trade up to grab him, kind of like another guy, Anfernee Simons, with the Portland Trailblazers a few years ago. They wanted to you know, get somebody that had entering. He was coming from the prep level in high school. No one really knew whether or not he could play. And sure enough, they gave him a few years to sit and learn, and now he's the backup point guard. So I think that with Scrub, it's going to kind of be that way. I think he's got the chance to be really good. Or on the other hand, I think that he has more to prove. Well, I shouldn't say he has more to prove. I think that he's going to have more in-depth conversations because we talked with Matt Babcock of Hoops Cup a few weeks ago, and he talked about how there were some concerns with Jordan, with his personality traits and how he handled games and his competitive nature and how he disappeared. And so teams are going to want to hear that, and they're going to want to know why that was and why he didn't get better in year three after coming off of the most improved player. Like, why didn't you win the conference player of the year? I would love to hear his answer to that. And I think Jordan's going to be a guy, not to be long-winded here, but Jordan's going to be a guy that there's going to be teams that say we can get him at the top or middle of the second round and he can still play the same role as in that selection and that pick as he could if we took him at 19 or 25. And I think that's going to be attractive for a lot of teams because with Jordan, you're going to get a guy who can play probably 12 minutes, 10, 12 minutes a night. And on any given night, he could give you 20 points because he could get hot from three. He's 6'8", 6'9". I heard, Luke Hancock, again, not to keep talking about that, but he said the Rockets. That's an interesting team because they play guys his size at center, and he can rebound. Jordan is a great rebounder. So I think that he's going to probably go later than Jay, but I think that Jordan's going to have a great NBA career. I think he's going to play 10, 12 years and going to be a role player on a lot of really good teams.
Yeah, he has a lot more potential than I think people realize. I think that the evidence has just been damning. Like you said, people have seen his tape. People have concerns. And he's going to have to take kind of a little bit of a longer road than many would have expected going into last season in order to make his career work out.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there is going to be a lot to talk about over the next couple of weeks because we're either going to be talking about a season being pushed back, a season still not sure in college football. We're going to be talking about college football happening in a little over a month. So things are going to be interesting around here. We are also, Presley, entering the time where we're going to find out what Louisville basketball does and what route they take in their response to the NCAA. Do they go with the independent review committee? Chris Mack kind of told us that they were going to do that, but if you don't know about that, once the punishment is given, it's final. There is no ability to appeal. Or do they go to the NCAA with the hopes of getting something that they can appeal and maybe in the process bring the NCAA down a little bit and get a little bit of revenge? So a lot to be talked about over the coming weeks, and hopefully you guys will continue to tune in.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. So, again – a lot going on around the Louisville campus, a lot going on with college sports, a lot going on in the bubble. Presley, I want to end the show by asking you, do you think that Jack Harlow and Lou Williams will ever hang out again?
Yeah, I think that they will come to a gentleman's agreement. I think that Jack's going to go in and pay $75,000 out of his pocket to Lou, split the fine, and go on about their ways.
I can dig that. That's a good friend right there. Jack, if you're listening, great advice from Presley on kind of how to handle the conflict management there.
Give him $75,000. What else would you do? Come on, Jack. It's fine.
Yeah. He could get his wings next time at Magic City if that's what needs to be to kind of get back on the same page. Anyways, we thank you guys for tuning in. As always, find us at BigRedLouie.com. Even with no sports, we're continuing to put out content that's interesting relating to the Louisville Cardinals. And you can follow us on Twitter at the Big Red Louie. Presley, man, I appreciate you jumping on with us. Alex has already left. We bored him with our NBA talk. But thanks for hopping on. It's been good catching up with you, man.
You too, my friend. Let's talk soon.